you have heard so far, concentrating on gender issues, nutrition, and technology. So it's been a great audience now. It is an opportunity for you to ask questions to these three panelists. Please.
Gene. Okay, yeah. Name is Gene Donifer. I retired from McGill 20 years ago, so I'm a fossil. But when I moved to Kingston, I started a course called Global Food Security 15 years ago, so I have some background. And what I realized is that in looking at all the topics relating to food security, we often forget one, that's political. Okay, there is a situation in East Africa and Asia, Latin America, where countries are using political force to change food security situations. It's called land grab. Has anybody ever heard of land grab? Okay, it's not talked about. It's not part of the biological system, whatever. I'll use Ethiopia as an example. I've been there four times, all parts of the country. In the 90s, we set up an epidemiology project in public health there in McGill. What has happened in Ethiopia is the government of Ethiopia is leasing land to the government of Saudi Arabia to grow food, which is exported to Saudi Arabia. This is happening in other countries in Africa and is happening in Latin America. It's a political question, and it often is not discussed or related to because we can talk about the biological and the other factors, but it is an important factor. Anybody can give me an answer to that, I would appreciate it. It's well documented. National Geographic, you can find lots of references on it. And John Galati McGill, an anthropologist, specializes in East Africa, just has a paper in press on the effect of land grant on tribes in Ethiopia. And it's not been published yet, so there are people who should be included in this discussion as well. Thank you.
Do you have a specific question?
Yes. Why is this not being presented?
Well, I love the topic of land. Actually, my work was in land reform in Southern Africa, and my research was around that, so land is... I think it has been presented. I probably know in the 10 minutes we had, when we talk about governance, we are talking about the rule of law for everybody. When we talk about equality and access to and control over resources, we are talking about mainly land as the main resource for food security. So when we are looking about the gender equality component cannot be disintegrated from the natural resources, and the one of them is going to be land. So I think the engagement with governments, that they are more responsible to societies, and the engaging with society that make their governments accountable to their populations are going to be the critical two elements to make sure that issues like land grabbing that is happening across Africa mostly right now, it will not have that negative impact that we are seeing.
I want to just add, there are small farmers in Ethiopia who are being displaced. Their land has been taken from them, and they're being turned on over to large corporations, usually owned or operated by other countries outside the area, and that food grown there is being exported to the home countries. This is a very specific case. It relates to small farmer agriculture we talk about, and the question here is displacement of small farms by industrial farms in Africa and Latin America, and the food then not being available to the population, which is either growing it or used to grow it.
Any other panelists like to make a comment? I like to say, really, land ownership and land holdings are a serious problem which connects directly to the policies of the different governments. I think, as you rightly said, the food security has to have this component brought in as a policy issue. How do we change that? Because otherwise it's going to affect the small-scale farmers. That's an important, very important issue. Certainly we have to be focusing on that as we move forward. I'd like to move to this gentleman here.
Thank you very much, Professor Raghavan. I have two questions. The first one goes to the first speaker. The second one goes to the last speaker. For the first speaker, I want to know, care. Are they doing anything about the cultural barrier that is standing against gender equality in terms of agriculture? Because I know that in most cultures, especially in the developing country, there are some cultures that hold it that women, they are not supposed to do this type of farming. So when you equalize, when you're doing the gender equality, are you taking into consideration such cultures? I know that in my own culture, like growing of yam, I don't think women are allowed to grow yam in my culture. Like the second question, which tapping of palm wine, which I'm going to ask Professor Ngadi if there is any technological intervention that is trying to sustain palm wine tapping, because it's a very valuable and cultural product in my country. But I see that it is phasing out because the youths are no longer interested. I think maybe because there is no technological intervention that we help the youths to go into it, because it's just about taking rope, climbing tree. The youths don't want to do that again. They want to press phone and make call. And so I don't know. Those are my two questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Who would like to take this first?
Well, the short answer is yes. Actually, that's the whole program about. I haven't talked about women. I talk about gender and gender equality. That means that we are working with men as much as we work with women. So we cannot engage on understanding social dynamics or the decision-making process that happened at the household level without being able to make men champions of gender equality. So one of the key areas that we are working is working with traditional leaders, working with husbands, with mother-in-law, that in many other countries are as much important as the husband in taking decisions about the role of women, on understanding the value of gender equality. So most of our food security programs have more gender experts working on the social dynamics that need to change, behavioral changes, and understanding the reality of cultural practices that always have a twist on what it really means, to engage women. We have more gender advisors than agronomists in some programs, because that's what we are seeing, that we have the technology, but we are not always able to do. Is easy? No. Is something that can be done in a couple of years? No. I mean, processes and programs of behavioral changes takes years. But I'm very happy to invite you to see some of the work that we are doing around gender equality on working with traditional leaders, working with religious leaders, and working with men champions on bringing gender equality to the table. So the answer is yes.
Thank you very much, Professor Ngadi.
And I would say also yes, in terms of technology. Now, when you are looking at palm wine tapping, I don't know whether many people are aware what that means. But even if you are not aware, just stick with me a little bit, and we can. The technology exists. It's, from a technical point of view, it's not an impossible thing. It's a doable thing. But the thing is, and I've said this many times, I was quite pleased to hear this last night from Dr. Wanze. You see, development is not really what you do to people. Is what you come alongside people. Now, in terms of bringing the technology to the villages or people or palm wine tappers is something that we would need to have the enabling environment to do it. And I think that the knowledge that is required is actually available, but for some reason has not been tapped into. And certainly something that if the opportunity presents, there would be people that can help. But certainly that has to come from within. The initial step has to come from within to see the need. I think the palm wine industry in West Africa could potentially be a huge thing, because it is something that is traditional. It's something that is has been there for several years. But again, people on the ground and people that live there have to see the need to actually move in that direction. But again, from a technical point of view, I see no problem with that, having a technology to do that.
Thank you very much. Please, sir.
Good morning. Thanks very much for the presentations. I'm directing my question directly to Dr. Odenigbo. I'm talking about the pillars of food security, which is access, availability, stability, and the four pillars. So we know Africa, we have a problem. We do have a lot of availability, but we don't have access. The rural community, they don't have access. Their food can't go to the market, as we saw yesterday, because of bad roads and stuff like that. And for stability, we know they have four components, which is ecological, economic, social, and political. And we know Africa has a very big problem with politics. As a member of the IFAD, you guys are trying to, like, bring nutritional stability to the rural areas and in Africa. So how do you guys try to, like, target the political part of it, as well as our access to the food being transported from the farmers to the market? This one goes to Dr. Nkari. Dr. Nkari, you were talking about, like, trying to tap out potentials from the poor and the royal people to, like, yield a big profit. I was like, we know that if you're building a project, you should have, like, two main components, which has to be, sorry. You know, if you're building a project, you have to, like, base on two components, which is environmental sustainability and how to empower women. So how do you, like, empowering women in your project as well as trying to, like, building the environmental sustainability of the communities? Thanks very much.
Okay. Please.
Okay. Thank you for your question. Yesterday, Dr. Nwanze made mention of IFAD work on, I think he described one of the projects on access to market road, building bridges. We do a lot of that, even in collaboration with other development partners. Like in Zambia, there's a project that IFAD is collaborating with WFP. And IFAD contribution in that project is to construct road and bridges. Because this, like I said in my presentation, these people are the unreached. And when you get there, you are correct. A lot of food production. So much food is produced, but they are wasted. Or people take advantage of them. When they come there, they downprice everything. So they don't have this income. So what we do in collaboration with WFP is to build bridge, access to road, link these farmers to the middle business, the real, what do you say? Like, link them to market, link them to the wholesaler, and with the digital, with the innovation, they now know how much their produce is cost. They link all this. So this is like what we do to help these farmers. Even aggregation, we also help them in aggregating their produce. Because when a smallholder farmer has just 10 bags of rice, a buyer can come and buy it at any price. But when they aggregate it in a larger bulk, they sell it in a higher, they have high value for their produce. So these are what we do. Then when you talk about governance, I think it will link to what the first question about land grabbing. We have a policy. You know, IFAD actually work with an instrument called COSOP. That's Country Strategic Opportunity Program. That has to do with the country strategy on food security. And we have a policy. We go there and we do, we have to speak with the beneficiary, the farmers. You don't just rely on what the government is saying. We have policy dialogue. We dialogue with the government. Try to improve, like the land grabbing. There's a project, actually, a loan that's supposed to go to Tanzania. But because of this land grabbing, the issue of land is withheld. The grant and the loan cannot go until that issue is resolved. So that is the kind of contribution, the effort to make.
Thank you very much. Are there any other panelists interested in commenting to that question?
Well, I think he has a question for me. Yeah. I can yeah, answer sure. that. Yes. Now, let me give you answer that with a very practical and field experience. As you know, we have been for the last 5 years working in eight African, West African countries, and particularly on a number of things, but particularly on rice processing. And I went to a village with colleagues, and we were sitting under a tree talking to village women processors. And the question came about how they process and parboil rice. And now, parboiling rice is a process that you would parboil, you would pre-cook the rice before you mill it. And one of the things that came out, and this was totally not planned, it was just spontaneous. And we asked them about how do they parboil the rice. Normally, they would get wood. They would get so-called firewood. And the women told us that they used to collect firewood, in other words, gather the wood from neighboring, you know, just around the village. But now they would go much, much further, like sometimes an hour. And I see Rebecca here, so Rebecca knows exactly. So the women would actually go hours just gathering the wood. And one of the things that came out from that meeting was to integrate, as part of the project, a sustainable way of providing energy and for parboiling. And we did that, and we got a number of people to work on that. Audrey Yang worked on that. And I'm pleased to say that last year or 2 years, we were able to actually transfer a technology that should reduce the use of firewood. And this is actually dramatic, because if you go to rice processing villages and you look around, you will see problems of deforestation, problems related to the cutting of wood and then the gathering of that wood. So that's a very typical example of how you have to factor in sustainability, energy sustainability, environmental sustainability in a project. Otherwise, then that project can be a disaster. And then, of course, it has to be. There has been a lot of talk about women and gender, and I don't want to go into that. But you've got to make sure that women are part of that project, and that women take ownership of that project. And Rebecca worked on a technique, different media. We call them media product, on how you can effectively transfer technologies to groups, including women, and we have learned a lot in the last 2 years about this, and we are hoping to be able to disseminate this to whoever will be interested in learning.
Thank you very much, madam.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. My name is Diana Dalman. I'm a PhD student at McGill in Nutrition Department. I remember having read a paper of Dean Spears from World Bank, and he speaks about poor sanitation being responsible for 65% of linear growth in children. So since this is a session of food security in developing countries, I was wondering if you are tackling also that issue of sanitation in your interventions. Thank you.
In one of the slides, which I couldn't present, under the four pillars, I made mention of WASH, and that is water supply, sanitation, and hygiene. It's one of the nutrition-sensitive intervention we integrate into the components of our project. So we actually take care of that. There's one project on value chain. This project is focused on increasing income on smallholder farmers. But with the collaboration with an NGO working on ORS, nutrition education, sensitizing farmers on good hygiene, clean water, we also work on improving water supply, access to water. So these are the ways we contribute and making a project, nutrition sensitive project.
Thank you very much. Sir.
Good morning. Thank you for this panel. It's great to see a great collection of knowledge under one roof this morning. My name is Wayne Radford. I'm here with some folks with the Urban Farming Project as well as Sustainable Concordia, and have a background in economic development and adult learning. So I have a question. Gathering all the skills and youth that we see here and looking forward to the next 15 to 20 year time frame, I see a lot of opportunity. I also see a preponderance of data and technology, and I suspect that technology isn't necessarily the problem. We have sufficient answers for this. If I could ask each of you in the panel, gentlemen from CARE, specifically, I was concerned during your presentation about the focus on East Africa and the target of 50 million people. Being able to reach that target when I see most of the budget is not spent on South America or the Caribbean, where there's probably at least 50 million people here as well. So I was concerned about how those targets are being reached and what the dissemination of technology and information and literacy is as a delivery mechanism for the solutions that we're trying to produce. In other words, we have the solutions and we have the people that need the help. The bridge, as we're talking about building bridges, aside from the physical architecture, is cultural. And so where do you see the opportunity for the folks gathered here in the next 10 years for soft targets to establish that community of trust? How would you go about that? Yeah, please.
Thank you.
Wow, that's a question. Well, first, the data that we saw around East Africa is for CARE Canada. So when you look at the CARE international level, it's broader intervention. So Latin America, Southern America will be included in our program. So I think probably the data there mislead a little bit the reality of how we are planning. So the intervention is more global. The fact is that us as CARE Canada, we have choices like focus in one area that we think we have more expertise. But in order to reach the 50 million, it's going to be for sure. Latin America is included, some of the Caribbean countries, Southeast Asia, but different members of the Federation are trying to focus in different areas. So I think good point on that one, because it doesn't really represent how we are working across the more than 80, 90 offices or countries on the ground. So that probably changed a little bit the reality. Related to what is the role of building bridges, I think one of the things that we have to remember is solutions in most cases are already on the ground. So I always, when I get invited to talk to students in the global north and the economic north, I feel a little bit, I'm the disappointed guy that gives the bad news. We are talking yesterday. We have, if you look at CARE Ethiopia, our office in Ethiopia has close to 1,000 staff right now. I mean, it's a huge office. It's a big intervention for us. It has 3 expats on the office. Only 3, there's 1 North American, 1 British, and 1 Pakistani are the only non-Ethiopian guys in that office, with an exception of people going for one workshop, building capacity, building some of these bridges. So what we have to remember is in most of countries that we work, in the global south, there's a huge potential, there's good universities, there are more and more people that are ready to resolve the problems of their own country. So don't forget that, because we are not here to solve anybody's problems. We are here to work together. So what is the role? I think first, we have an important role as consumers in the north. We have an important role in lobbying our own governments and their own companies in how they operate. So I think the main role that we have as an organization or as individuals is our capacity to influence how power holders take decisions. And if that is going to be actually a big piece of the strategy that we were trying to present today, is focusing that power holders' influence. So how do you buy your food? Where do you buy it? How do you engage? Where do you put the money on your pension plan? What are the companies that you're investing when you are saving money? Those elements are critical in order to have a bigger impact and to reach these 50 million or these 100 million people. That we are not going to reach 100 or the 800 million people by doing projects in the global south. That's an important component of the solution. That's how we are going to engage with the poorest of the poor that nobody reaches, as you said. But the big change is going to be in how we take decisions here. how do we engage in society, how we engage with local farmers. And if we don't change the rules, we will keep doing small projects in the Global South that will have impact in 100,000, 200,000 people, but not really up to the millions. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Thank you. I take the last question, please.
Hi. This is a much more specific question. I was wondering, this goes back to the use of firewood, and I was wondering if any of these projects deal with the use of firewood and like within enclosed spaces and within the home, and how that, like many homes in this community are exposed to like very large levels of particulate matter within the home, and that can affect their ability to do work and practice agriculture. And I wonder if any of these projects incorporate that.
Yeah, the simple answer is yes. I don't know how much detail that you want me to go into, and for the sake of time, I would be happy to talk to you about it. The answer is very clearly yes.
Yes, and with improved cooking stove.
Yes. I would say the same. I mean, many of the programs related to household economy are going to be engaging with how cooks, how across the use of energy, the cooking processes, and actually that will be a great element also to engage men on the household element, and then it's suddenly something cool and modern, and men engage in new technology that reduces the consumption of wood, for instance.
Thank you. Before closing, please join me in thanking all of our three panelists.